Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for April 17th, 2011. I'm David McLaughlin, and with me as always, Tim Shiflett. Welcome.
Good evening, sir.
And Catherine Smith from Atlanta. Welcome, Catherine.
Hello, everyone. Happy spring.
Yes. Palm Sunday, and we were just talking about before the show went on, it's getting close to our fourth anniversary. We're thinking next week will be it. We'll promise you a good show, but we probably won't have an egg hunt, correct? I don't know how we do that in radio, but so that's what we have on. But tonight we just finished the legislative session of Georgia and wanted to have someone on for the Democratic House leadership, and Representative Debbie Benningfield of Columbus, who's the secretary of the Democratic Caucus, was so gracious to
Buckner.
Join us.
David, welcome. It's Debbie Buckner.
I apologize. Mr. Representative Buckner, welcome.
It is such an honor to be confused with Stephanie.
She's a hero of mine. Yes, there's a change in plans recently, and I apologize to you.
That's
Representative
all right.
Buckner. Yes, well, just looking from the outside, you know, I think a lot of folks figured that there would be more done in the session, although with the Republicans in charge, someone like myself that's a little left of center, probably happy that not as much got done in some ways. What's the old saying? Do no harm. But
right.
Why do
first
you think
you
the
do
Republicans,
no harm.
First do no harm. With the big majorities that the Republicans have in the State House and State Senate and in the governorship and all kind of other offices like lieutenant governorship, why do you think they failed to get more of their agenda accomplished?
It seemed to me we got off to a very slow start with that blanket of snow that just threw everything off center, and it seemed like we never did really get past that, not exactly disorganization, but just dysfunction. It was a session where there was an awful lot of confrontation, but not a great deal of conversation. And I think that slowed things down. I think those of us in the loyal opposition and the press kept putting the brakes on what they wanted to do. And I guess a classic example of that was the tax proposal. They came in raring to go with that, and whenever we would get their numbers and run them and look at them, we would see major flaws, and they'd have to go back to the drawing board.
Yes. Now, speaking of that tax bill, that was something that people had figured would pass in some form, and then it just got pulled right at the end by the Speaker of the House, Ralston. What was your take on the tax bill, Representative Buckner?
Well, I think the interesting thing, Stacey Abrams, the leader in the Democratic Party, of course, is a tax attorney. And when they would pull out their proposal and she would go home at night and run those numbers, we found that some of their premises were flawed when you actually put the pen to the paper, as we say in my house. And what was interesting about it is you had to be very careful about what you passed in that tax proposal because of the impact it would have on the current budget. So if you passed a tax proposal that was going to be a tax cut or instead of revenue neutral or not bring in new revenue, then it would cause there to be a hole in the budget, as we say, and we'd have to find another way to either cut more or find another way to fund necessary services.
Yes. Well, of course, we got more issues to talk about throughout the session, but I'm not going to do all the questions right now. I'm going to pass it around. Catherine, what are some questions you have for Representative Buckner?
Well, I'm curious about something. It's kind of specific, and I wouldn't be surprised if you didn't know the answer to it, but there's been a lot of conversation, of course, about Sunday sales, and, you know, everybody, a lot of my friends are really happy that this finally passed, and, you know.
Right.
But we're wondering how, actually gets on the ballot in the municipalities. And the bill is very vague about that. Do you? I know that's a very specific question, and I wouldn't expect you to necessarily know the answer, but I was just wondering if you did.
It's I don't know the specifics either, except that what I understand is that the local government entities would have to do the necessary action to get it on the next general election ballot.
So it doesn't sound like it needs a petition or it's just basically up to the county or city government.
It's my understanding, and I may be wrong, but because it seemed vague to me as well. I think citizens would petition their local government entities in a sense of going and asking for it to be put on the ballot.
Okay. And just in terms of, in general, the whole session, what do you think were the, it's hard to say that we had any wins, but what do you perceive as the sort of successes that we had in this session?
Well, I actually
think
that as a Democrat, I think that we did have a few wins. I think the fact that the tax proposal was not just passed for the sake of passing it, because there were a lot of parts of that proposal that would hit what I call middle-income families of Georgia and make it very hard for them to do what they want to do, and that would be to put food on the table and work towards putting their kids through school and college and keeping them safe and taking care of seniors. And those kinds of issues could have been negatively impacted if the tax reform bill had gone through as it was. I think the other thing that while we don't like a lot of the changes that occurred with HOPE, the other piece of the whole HOPE conversation was the pre-K kindergarten, and we were able to make some changes in that so that were good changes to be able to keep that extended. Instead of having a four-hour day, we were able to get it to keep it at the same regular number of hours every day. And there were several of the proprietary schools we were able to get added back in that could be covered by HOPE. They originally had wanted to take out remedial work for the technical schools, which was just awful in my opinion, because a lot of the people that are losing their jobs right now have not been in school for years. And when they go back to, say, a technical school to learn a new craft or job, they need that remedial time to kind of get back up to speed for school and then go on into the technical courses. So there was a lot that didn't go 100% our way, but we were able to influence some things. And one of the things, of course, I track environmental issues pretty heavily and health issues, and there was a bill to allow landfills to be sited over aquifer recharge areas. And an aquifer recharge area is like an underground lake where a lot of us get our drinking water from. And it's just not a cool idea to do that. So we were able to table that in committee, and I that was one thing I said, aha, we finally did something that could be
a victory.
A victory, yes. So we celebrated and claimed every tiny little victory that we could. There were not as many as we would like, but we are, of course, in the minority, and we did raise questions at key points. We did make some changes in policy. We were not able to stop some of the things that they were so determined to go through with. Every year that I have been in the legislature, a bill has come up to take what they call the insurance mandates off. Are you familiar with those?
Mm-hmm.
It's where if you go and buy an insurance plan, then in Georgia, you know that your insurance plan is going to include paying for your child's immunizations or paying for a woman to have a mammogram. So it has certain baseline requirements that are mandated by law. And every year that I've gone to the legislature, they've wanted to take those mandates off so that they could offer a more reasonably priced insurance product. And they were able to pass something like that this year. It will allow people to buy insurance plans that are actually licensed in another state. And that was very much a disappointment for a lot of us. But we fought it hard, and we did all we could to prevent that from happening. And it's just one of those, we didn't have the numbers to defeat it again. So people, when they vote next time, just need to put more of us up there.
Yeah, and we need to remind them of all those things when it comes time to
exactly.
vote again.
That's true. That's true.
I wanted to ask you one more thing about the Hope Scholarship legislation. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I think was really an accomplishment that you didn't mention that I personally worked a little bit with Jason Carter on was changing the SAT score, including the top two students in each high school. That was a really big accomplishment, and we must remember all the things about Hope when we go back on the campaign trail in 2012 or before, because I think that that it's going to be important to remind people of all that.
That's
all I have
right.
for now. I'm going to pass this over to Tim.
Good evening, Representative. How are you doing?
I
wanted to change gears just a little bit because there is one more really big thing coming up this year. That, of course, is redistricting.
Exactly.
And I was wondering if you had any sense of how that will affect the Columbus area where you hail from.
We definitely are in an interesting situation. If the census had happened just a tad later after all of the people that move into Columbus as a part of the base realignment at Fort Benning, we would have had a much larger increase in our population and would be better off than we are right now. We've got two districts that are shy a large number of voters. I'm shy 3,000 voters in my district. Most of the redistricting, of course, will happen in the special session that's been slated for the 15th of August, and we'll come back to Atlanta and do that. That is probably the most political, most contentious process that legislators ever involve themselves in, and it's, of course, very personal. And I am not on the reapportionment committee, and I've never been through reapportionment, but I came in right after it happened last time and went through the judges redrawing the maps. And I think the most important thing that I can say about redistricting is that most of the area outside of the northern part of the metro district are going to be looking for voters because there was such a growth of the population in the state. We've got to have more people in our district next time than we have this time. And I would encourage people to find out when the public hearing is going to occur in their area and attend that and learn about the process and let people know what are the issues in their area they're concerned about. And it may be things like, you know, we don't want a bunch of split precincts. I'm just using that as an example. But whatever things that are unique and special about that area that would have an impact on redistricting, they need to go to those public hearings and they need to make those known. And if you're fixing to ask when those are, I'm looking for that piece of paper. And if I find it by the end of our
okay.
conversation, I'll let you know.
That will be great. I did have one other question. Going back to the failure of the Republicans to pass their own tax reform bill, I mean, to the average person watching this, they see that Republicans have firm majorities in the House and the Senate. They control the governorship, every statewide constitutional office, and all the departments down there. Why can't they pass their own tax reform bill? I mean, they can't even get a vote on it. Why?
Well,
are they having some sort of inter-party war? Or, I mean,
well, they don't tell me a whole lot, but what I see from the outside looking in appears, and if you watched, there was actually an attempted coup at one point during the legislative session over in the Senate, and of course they worked real hard at the beginning, even before we went to Atlanta on the Senate side. They were working really, really hard to strip the lieutenant governor of all of his power to do things like appoint committees and that kind of thing. There was definitely infighting. There was a whole new group of, there was a large group of freshman legislators that were both in the House and the Senate, and so that was a whole new group of people and to deal with, to learn. The whole dynamic of the Tea Party came into play, particularly with the tax proposal, because it's really interesting, and we are at a time when our tax structure is no longer working to pay for the needs of the state, and we need to fix that, but no one wants to raise taxes. And why do you want to upset the apple cart at a time when we're all in having a difficult enough time? Why do you want to change things when everything's kind of in an uproar anyway? And so it was an interesting thing to watch. There was a lot of fighting within the party, I think a little more so on the Senate side than the House, within the House, but it was definitely interesting, as they say.
And just a final question, and I just wanted your general comments, because obviously a new star was born this year in the House, and that's Stacey Abrams. She really exhibited a great deal of leadership this session against incredible odds, didn't she?
She did. We really could not have had a person that was more, quite frankly, perfect for the times with her tax background and her just general means of assessing the situation and strategizing about how to handle things. And she is respected by people on both sides of the aisle, and in fact I think she's even somewhat threatening to some of the people on the other side of the aisle because of her wealth of knowledge. So she was very much a rising star, but she was just a great leader for us at this time.
Okay, thank you for that, Representative Buckner. I'll turn it back over to David now.
Yes, so Representative Buckner, one issue that I know is just a huge issue for a lot of people in Metro Atlanta and probably a lot of districts that are represented by Republican representatives or senators would be transportation. I mean, they go to their job, they get stuck trying to get home where they could see their kids. And it appeared that little or nothing was done on that issue. What is there more done on that I saw? And if nothing was done, why aren't a lot of these constituents demanding more gets done to get them out of traffic so they can live their lives?
Well, to me, it was not a year that where very much was done on transportation. It was kind of like there were some rumors when we went up there that there might be some changes to the transportation bill that we had passed the year before. You remember that one where there would be regional transportation planning and all of that? And then I think the vote for a penny for transportation is on the horizon. And it is still very much on the minds of a great deal of citizens, as you say, you know, people who sit in traffic for an hour or two every day and it just in bottleneck that makes no sense. I haven't been a great traveler, but I've been to other places, and I have never understood why in the city of Atlanta there's no mass transit that works and why we think it can't work in Georgia. And why we haven't done something to try to make it work. There, it was really quiet. The most one of the most vocal bills that I remember that had anything to do with transportation was one to relax some of the rules for them when they're building to be able to have the sediment run off into our streams. I don't know if you're familiar with that bill, and I'm thinking it was like House Bill 131, and that was talked about the most of anything that had anything to do with transportation, and for the, as far as I can remember.
Yeah, and that's really controlling a side effect, not actually coming up with a solution. Even if, you know, the sediment, well, I mean, there's problems with it, but then even if it somehow, it doesn't fix anything. So
you're right, it was
an absolutely ignored issue. Well, I guess the other issue that came up right towards the end of the session, I guess because Hope and then the tax bill took up a lot of the oxygen, if you will, was the immigration bill, and it did pass at the end.
It did.
What is the average voter in Georgia going to see as a difference from that bill?
I can't say with any certainty, and I need to preface what I'm going to say with this. I represent part of Fort Benning and south part of Columbus, and I have some constituents in my district that have tried for years, and when I say years, it's anywhere from 7 to 12 years. They've worked at becoming naturalized citizens and going through the proper process. And it may have cost them anywhere from $5,000 to $12,000 to go through the process. And these are people from Russia and Japan and Vietnam and Mexico. And the system for people that want to be legal and want to become naturalized citizens in our country is definitely not working out very well for them. It's very costly, it's time consuming, and it doesn't seem like to them sometimes it's a very fair process. With that being said, and thinking that something has got to be done to fix the system, I do not believe that the bill that we passed is the answer. I have heard from people that are in agriculture that are extremely concerned that the migrant workers that usually come into our state to pick everything from onions to peaches to watermelon to planting pine trees are just going to avoid us and just go around us or go through our state to other states and not risk going through the process of being harassed by this law. Local law enforcement officials are saying they don't have the time to do what they need to be doing now, and they're not certain how they're going to take on these new responsibilities of detaining people until they have verified whether they are legal or not. And with people coming to Fort Benning that are legal and to have, you know, the risk of a national incident of incarcerating the wrong person because they may not have had a certain piece of paper with them when they go to the grocery store, those are things that are going to be interesting to see how they play out and a little and scary for people that are not from our country that are here visiting, and I think it could have a bad impact on our tourism, our visitors to especially to Atlanta since it's such an international city, and I think that there was a better, different way to handle the problem than what we've done with the immigration bill we passed.
Yeah.
David, I'd like to follow up on that question, too. Was there much discussion about all these issues during the discussion about this bill? Because, I mean, you landed on almost all the things that I'm really concerned about this bill. And it just seems like a real big mistake as far as our economy, and you know, with the agriculture, the tourism, all these things, was any of that discussed, or was it just ignored? Or
if you were watching the last night, there was not much discussion when it had gone to the Senate and came back for agree disagree, and that's typical. But during when it first came to the floor of the House, there were a number of people who spoke on both sides of the issue. And, of course, Representative Marin, who is Puerto Rican, told in a almost emotional way about how from his story, it's almost like his mother, who speaks Spanish but is Puerto Rican, and you know that is a territory of the United States, and people are mean to her and some many times out in public and say, "Why don't you speak English? You're an American now." And the lack of tolerance and rudeness bothers me greatly as a native Georgian. I just don't want us to be perceived that way and treat people that way. But to answer your question, there was a great deal of floor debate, but people had pretty much come with their minds made up and voted pretty much along party lines.
Yeah. Do you think the governor's going to sign it?
From all the newspaper articles I've been seeing in the last day and a half, he says he's ready to sign.
Yeah, that's what I've seen, too. I mean, I just know that there was pressure from, you know, agriculture, from the chamber, from all different avenues. It just seems odd that it was, you know, neglected and ignored.
Yeah.
But thank you. I'm sorry, David, I didn't mean to interrupt you like that. But
oh, no problem. That was a good point to follow up on. Well, Representative Buckner, we want to thank you for coming on the Kudzu Vine discussing the session and hope in the future that you would consider coming on back with us.
I'll be glad to anytime. Just give me a call. Let me know when.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Have a nice evening.
Thank you.
You too. Good night.
Yes. Well, during the week, Tim, I'm going to stay with Georgia. You sent Catherine and I a piece of audio, and we had discussed last week the Missouri bill, which would cut unemployment benefits. If you do a Google search, the Kansas City papers, the Jefferson City papers, the St. Louis papers, all these different media sources are on top of these issues. And this piece of audio was on WBAE, probably not one of the major news sources for Georgia. I guess it's maybe in some circles in Atlanta it's listened to. But that's the only place that I've heard this piece of audio where current Labor Commissioner Mark Butler almost brags that Georgia will soon be joining Missouri. Tim, you found this, so we'll let you have the first shot at critiquing Labor Commissioner Butler's thoughts on this and why there's been no real discussion of it.
Well, I think one reason there hasn't been a lot of discussion of it is a lot of people don't know about it. Not only about this interview, but you know, the setup part that you just entered with, and that's that 22,000 people could lose their benefits. There's $175 million set aside by the federal government to extend those benefits. It costs the state no money. And as of the time of this interview, the state had taken no action. And then this interview with our labor commissioner, the first thing I thought about, David, was comparing what we have for a labor commissioner now to what we used to have. Oh, boy, you talk about daylight and dark. I mean, they would ask this guy these pointed questions about, you know, the stuff that I just said. And he'd say stuff like, well, it depends on how you look at it. What is he talking about? There ain't but one way to look at it. There's the money already appropriated. It ain't going to cost the state a dime. And 22,000 people could lose their benefits. What does he say? Well, I'm going to quote him. He said, I can tell you from traveling around the state, there are jobs out there. What is he saying? That these people are lazy bums who don't want a job while they're drawing benefits? That's exactly what he's saying. Even though the man who interviewed him made the point that if you got a choice between a couple of $100 a week, no benefits at all, and a job, who's not going to take the job? Of course, he could not answer that. What he didn't want to say is he's just not for, you know, unemployment benefits for unemployed people. I guess he just thinks people need to starve or something. I'm acutely disappointed in this interview. Aren't you, Catherine?
Yes, I was very disappointed, and I often think about this, sort of accusatory tone that the right takes about people who receive any kind of benefits from the government.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, we all pay into the unemployment thing, so, whatever. But, of course, there's always people that will take advantage of an opportunity. There will be. But that doesn't mean that you don't give the benefits to those people that need them and aren't taking advantage of them. It's like just because one person might be getting benefits when they could get a job, then nobody gets them. It's preposterous. It's like the old welfare thing, like, oh, well, there's those welfare queens who are, driving Cadillacs. And, like,
yeah.
Sure, maybe there's one. Or there might be, how many ever. But that doesn't mean that you take the benefits away from everyone. That's what this is all about. That's what government is all about, is determining where you cut those benefits. What is too much? What is too little? That's what we're looking for. We're looking for leadership in those areas. And what we get from someone like this guy is just, sort of right-wing, almost libertarian, small L, attitudes. And it just doesn't get us anywhere. It's not helpful, and it's not informed. He didn't sound informed at all to me. It sounded kind of stupid.
Yep. Yeah, honestly, if I had to describe him in one word, I'd use that word of callous.
Yeah.
Forget uninformed.
Yeah.
I mean, The Undertaker, I don't know if you're familiar with that wrestler, he used to have a gimmick called Mean Mark Callous. Well, Mark Butler could take his name pretty easily because that's how he behaves, it seems like. Tim, I want to thank you for sharing that video, so maybe more people will hear about it.
But one thing I wanted to ask, he said, he can tell us that there are all these jobs out there. Well, Georgia's unemployment rate is higher than the national average. So where's all these jobs this guy's talking about?
Well, he's talking about all those immigrants and planting pine trees.
All those undocumented workers that are working.
Yeah. See, now that they've gotten rid of them, then you can get a job picking strawberries and watermelon and planting pine trees. So he knew what was coming. So he was a day ahead of you, Tim. You're absolutely right. And really, I mean, to me, a lot of times when these guys, they come with all their states' rights. Well, this is a federal right that people have, and this guy has restricted the state of Georgia. It's like if you live in 48 states, you can do as you please, and we'll follow the federal government mandate. And us, these two states, Missouri and Georgia, we'll just do whatever we want and ignore your federal rights, and you're paying federal taxes. So it's almost like they're restricting your ability to be a U.S. citizen in a way. And I still think that, in Missouri there's such an outcry. Why in the world has Georgia not had that outcry? I mean, the Atlanta Constitution, Channel 11, whatever, Macon Telegraph, whatever news source needs to get on this and do a better job. I mean, Dennis O'Hare was the guy that did the interview for public radio, and great job to him, but a lot of times when you really create a groundswell, it takes all the media sources, and probably more than just the media sources, on this. I mean, probably some labor unions and other groups could pick this up and add some steam behind it, because this guy, Mark Butler, he's just falling down the job.
Yep. Yeah, amen. Well said.
Yes. Well, I tell you what, let's go ahead and talk about one non-Georgia story. And before we get into anything else, and this kind of a bigger story with a lot of these straw polls, but in Orangeburg, South Carolina, and apparently Orangeburg is a Democratic stronghold in South Carolina,
mm-hmm.
and no, that's not an oxymoron, apparently. You can be a Democratic stronghold in South Carolina, even though it's a Republican overall. They had a convention, and they straw polled all 30 candidates they could possibly put on for 2012 Republican presidential nominee, and they only had 25 people to vote. More candidates than people to vote. Have you ever heard of a situation like this, Catherine?
No. That may be in high school or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a presidential election of a nation of 300 million people, not, you know, class treasurer at so-and-so high school. So,
well,
yeah,
well,
I mean,
obviously, though, they had to publish this. This group did, or the media wouldn't have even picked up on it.
Yes,
didn't they think, wait a minute, how dumb this is going to look, you know? Oh, well.
Yeah, and they have these big district conventions apparently all over the country, I guess, because I saw enough of them in Georgia. And then that kind of brings us into some of the results. If you looked at some of the results, Ron Paul won this particular convention. Rand may be the actual candidate of the Paul family, but Ron won this one. And then it talks about some of the other ones, results in Georgia. Newt Gingrich did pretty well. Huckabee did pretty well. Herman Cain did quite well at these things. One guy that did not was Haley Barbour. As you look down some of the links to these early results of probably your most hardcore voters, Tim, could you gather who should get in and who should get out, or who should stay in and who should get out
based on these numbers? Not from these straw polls. I tell you, for one thing, you mentioned Paul winning one. The Paul bots love to pack these things. They were famous for doing it 4 years ago and then just gleefully posting these things and saying, look what we've done here. A guy who didn't do well at all at these straw polls 3 years ago was John McCain. He ended up with a nomination. So I don't pay a great deal of attention. It's like Herman Cain. A guy like him would do well at these too because his supporters, although small in number, are very committed to doing any and everything they can to publicize their candidate. So, you know, and of course we both know that neither Dr. Paul or Herman Cain are going to get anywhere near the Republican nomination. If they do, God help the Republicans. You know, no, I don't pay no attention to these.
Another person that did do quite well was Donald Trump. Catherine, I kind of thought this thing would be like a one-week, two-week fad, but apparently he may extend this into a third or fourth week or even longer. Why is the Donald been able to have some staying power among Republican voters?
Well, apparently it's his feelings about the birth certificate. Apparently there's a lot of GOP voters who feel this is very important. But I assure you that we will see him for at least another month because he's not making his official announcement until the last episode of Celebrity Apprentice. So he's going to be up there on Sunday night with, you know, whoever, Gary Busey and all
maybe
those guys. I don't know if you watch
that
show. But that's his, that's when he's making his announcement, and that's like May 23rd or something.
Yeah,
yeah, Gary Busey is vice president. That would be way more fun than Joe Biden.
Actually,
I mean, let's be honest.
Get this.
Well, Latoya Jackson's on there, too.
That's actually going to be an announcement about when or if he's going to make an announcement.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
An announcement announcing the announcement.
Yeah, that's the official announcement as to whether or not there's going to be an official announcement.
Yeah.
What a
mess. Now, let me ask
you.
Yeah, I'm sure. Do you think that the Donald Trump would have any chance of violating the nepotism laws? I mean, I've seen his Apprentice show, and it seems like it's, you know, little girl Trump and little boy Trump 1 and little boy Trump 2. You know, I mean, I guess they would all get cabinet posts, wouldn't they? Just be a whole bunch of Trumps.
Do y'all think name recognition also might be driving these old numbers for Trump? Because he is certainly well-known.
Are you saying that Donald Trump is a better-known name in America than Michigan Representative Thaddeus O'Connell or McConnell or whatever his name is?
Right.
I thought he was on the ballot.
I bet more people can tell you who Donald Trump is than can tell you who the Senate Majority Leader is. I'd bet every dime I had they could.
I bet you're right. Well, but
yeah,
and Mitch
McConnell wasn't even on the ballot, so on this ballot at least.
But the other thing about Trump, I think that the thing is about Trump is people think that he's, you know, a successful businessman, and so, you know, that's what we need. We need a successful businessman running the country. Well, first of all, I don't agree with that premise at all, ever. I never have. Ross Perot, you know, everybody, I never agreed with that. I think they're completely different skill sets. But also, Donald Trump is not really that successful a businessman. Like, how many times has he been bankrupt? I'd be interested to see how many tax breaks he's gotten for his buildings and developments. I'm sure that he'll, you know, rail against that kind of thing at some point, but if anybody is doing their proper research, they'll find that, I'm sure, I don't know this, I haven't checked it out, but I would be surprised if he hasn't gotten a whole bunch of those, you know, sales tax abatements and property tax abatements and all that stuff in order to do those massive developments that he's done. So I think that that's a myth that people fall for. Oh, he's a successful businessman because he's, you know, got a gold Trump Tower or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think that plays into it, too.
Tim, I just heard that Catherine's really sore because she always loses Donald Trump the board game whenever she plays. Is that true, Catherine?
I didn't know there was. Is there really a Donald Trump board game?
I believe there is. I mean, any hokey thing he can do to tell himself. I mean, it's a joke. But then, you know, the birth certificate thing, he latched on to that, I guess, to give him some credibility with the birther crowd, and that probably is an oxymoron, unlike something we said earlier. But now the craziest thing is he's saying that the president didn't write his first book, Dreams of My Father, that was actually written by the weatherman, what's his name?
Bill
Ayers.
Yeah, William Ayers.
Why in the world would he come out with this, Tim?
Well, that's a play, I think, on that Sarah Palin line about palling around with terrorists. If Donald Trump knows how to do one thing, it's go to school on other successes and pick up on them. And he saw what pushed the buttons of party activists 3 years ago. And just basically everything Sarah Palin said was one thing that did it. So here we come with the birther stuff, and here we come with the terrorist stuff, and that's what this really is. And you know, so far Donald Trump has not talked any at all about the issues in this and that and the other. What Donald Trump is talking about is all this crazy stuff about the president and all these conspiracies and stuff like that, and he's latching on to them, and he's helping his poll numbers, and he knows that.
Yes, and I'm just shocked to see how high they are. I believe they had a new poll that came out this week from Public Policy Polling that actually showed him in the lead. Now,
mm-hmm.
We could probably do an over-under on how many weeks that lead will last, but the fact that he even got one shows you how either unknown or underwhelming are both the Republican field of real contenders is.
Here's a scary thought, that the people who are voting in this poll actually believe that nonsense.
Yeah, probably an unbelievable number probably believe
yeah.
it. You know, probably I'd say a majority of Republican voters believe a lot of this stuff. And honestly, I think a lot of these folks – they just want to believe. I mean, if you told tomorrow that, you know, President Obama wasn't born in Nigeria or Indonesia or any of these other countries, and he was born on Mars and came down in a spaceship, I mean, do you think you could probably get a plurality of voters in the Republican primary to believe it? Yeah, because it sounds bad. I mean, they want to believe anything that sounds bad about the president. Same thing that they did with President Clinton. And I wasn't, you know, old enough to know, but I'm sure they did the same thing with President Carter. They would have done the same thing if Al Gore would have been rightfully, you know, given the White House. I mean, it's just they're going to tear down whoever gets the spot because that's just their M.O., if you will.
And, you know,
well,
I meant to say when we were
ahead,
talking Kevin. About the labor commissioner, I think that's part of his angle, too. is not to accept this money from the federal government, just out of not because we're not entitled to it, not because we don't need it, but because it's federal money and we shouldn't take it, and it's just giving Obama a win. I think there's a part of it there.
Yeah, it's just be as conservative as you can possibly be for the sake of appeasing the base, because that seems what they want. Although I think he, in the case of Butler, I believe he's a little bit true believer in some of this, more so than some that are just opportunists. Not that one's better or worse than the other in some ways. Well, Tim, I believe you have an outrage for us. Let's go ahead and go with that, because that'll leave us enough time in case we need some discussion on it.
All righty. Just this Friday, the U.S. House of Representatives passed the Paul Ryan budget almost exclusively along party lines. And immediately, Ryan and the Republicans were almost universal in their trumpeting the virtues of this budget, saying that it'll cut trillions of spending over the next decade. Save America from the big spending liberals and socialists and so forth. Yeah, right. And instead of the Braves in the NBA playoffs today, I wanted to announce that I opted for watching college bowling on ESPN, right? No, actually, I didn't do that. So let's get back to reality. And let's have some of those pesky facts about budget and who does what and such. Now, this budget passed by the Republican House does indeed cut spending on government programs over the next 10 years to the tune of about $4.3 trillion. Stuff like Medicare, Medicaid, and other social spending is going to absolutely get whacked in this budget. There was no mention of cutting defense spending in this budget, and no mention, of course, of any favorite Republican pet programs getting the axe in this budget. But you know what is mentioned, folks? Why, more tax cuts for the rich and big business. How much? Well, that would be about $4.2 trillion over the next 10 years, or just about the same amount as the spending cuts. So this budget essentially guts most government social spending in order to give big shot Republican donors a tax cut. Now, what this really is would be something straight out of the old trickle-down playbook. Give the rich a big tax cut, they say, and the wealth will spread to all of us. Never mind that six presidents have tried this and none have succeeded. And also, never mind that programs championed by the Democrats would be those on the chopping block in order to pay for this tax cut for the rich. In recent days, Paul Ryan has been shockingly, to me, toasted far and wide by the media for being brave and proposing tough answers to hard choices. And I find that description of Ryan to be interesting. For what is brave about giving your supporters a big tax cut, especially when they are the ones who need it the least? And what is brave about paying for those same tax cuts on the literal backs of those who can least afford it, or those who have the least voice to protest it? What is so brave about a Republican attacking Medicare, a program which that party has universally hated? And I don't want Republicans to say that isn't true either. When Harry Truman first proposed Medicare way back in 1948, they fought it tooth and nail for the next 17 years until Lyndon Johnson finally signed it into law in 1965. And what is so brave about parroting Republican talking points about wasteful spending? Let me tell you all something about spending. Two presidents are responsible for 56% of the national debt. They are George W. Bush and Ronald Reagan. And they had compliant Congresses for just about their whole term, so don't anybody try to blame this on Congress either. Right now, the national debt is $14.2 trillion. Well, two wars, Medicare Part D, and two rounds of tax cuts all started during the Bush administration by Bush and a Republican Congress now accounts for over one-fourth of the entire national debt. Four things, none of it paid for. Now, those are facts. Go look them up. And stuff like that is the reason that I will not, A, be lectured by any Republican or teabagger on spending, the debt, or the economy, and B, I will entertain no ideas like those proposed by Ryan or anyone who supports what he said. You see, some things just simply should not be discussed. I am not going to, for one second, consider anything any Republican has to say to me about how to fix Social Security or Medicare. I already know how they want to fix them. They want to cut them, or they want to privatize them. And I'm not going to talk about any balancing of any budget if tax increases for the wealthy are also not on the table. We can't afford any more tax cuts for the privileged who don't need any. We don't have the money. We're broke, thanks to the Republicans mostly, as I've already pointed out. And I don't want to talk about gutting something like the EPA, as this Ryan budget does. Any program that ensures clean air and drinking water and safe food should not even be touched or talked about. Were all these people and their concerns about runaway spending when the people they voted for were actually doing it. What it looks like now is that they are just using this as a political issue just in time for the next election. That's what they're doing. So how can I take that seriously? And why would anyone else? Fortunately, this Ryan budget is DOA. It'll be stopped in the Senate. But what about the next time? Because Ryan and his crowd are not going to stop. They will not be reasoned with. They will not be satisfied unless they totally get their way about everything. When they want to fix problems in a fair and equitable way, then I'll talk. Then I'll negotiate. When the richest are asked to share the sacrifice that I'm asked to make, I'll pay attention. When something besides all that I care about is on the chopping block, then I'll listen. When those who have caused much of the problem stop pointing an accusing finger at me and those I vote for, then I'll lose my indignation. When they really want to meet someone halfway, then I'm willing. Until then, I ask the Democrats to do whatever they can to protect the weak, the sick, the poor, the children, the elderly, all of those who can't protect themselves from this onslaught by this new group of ideologues. Remember, being on the right does not make it right. Nowadays, it just means that you're somebody I don't want to talk to. David?
I tell you, I'm just waiting for the book to come out, Something's the Matter with, or What's the Matter with Wisconsin, you know, the book from about a decade ago about Kansas. Wisconsin has really given us some doozies lately with the Governor Walker there and now, and of course, the election frauder, if you will, and now Ryan. Just a real mess up there.
Just go read this budget, folks, or parts of it, or what's in it. I don't guess it's class warfare to kick the poor and old people around and stuff like that, in order to give tax cuts to rich people. I don't guess that's class warfare, but then I'm accused of engaging in it. Go figure.
Yes. Well, there's just a little bit of time left on the Kudzu Vine and a ton of topics we had written out that we didn't get to. Catherine, of what I sent out, what looks good to you to discuss?
Well, I was kind of intrigued by the redistricting challenges in Virginia.
That is an unusual circumstance where the Senate, it sounds like, the Republican-controlled House of Delegates and Senate passed the plan, and then the Republican governor vetoed it. Why in the world would it seems like they would get on the same page with something as, you know, overtly political as redistricting? Tim, you usually have a good take on these things, and of course your folks at Hedgehog, Virginia being so close. What's being said about this?
I think the general consensus is that this thing's going to wind up in the courts. You know, I think that's where it's headed. I don't think they're going to be able to come to an agreement on this thing, David. I think you're going to see this one in the courts.
Yeah, I mean, do you think the governor's thinking, oh, well, it's going to go to the courts anyway, so why expend political capital on it? So just let it go to the courts, or do you think he has philosophical issues with it?
You know, I don't know, but I would have to go with the former because, you know, if you just pick out a governor of a state, and especially this guy, I mean, I don't agree with him on hardly anything, but I tell you what, I don't accuse him of not being practical. If we're sitting here on the kudzu vine tonight talking about it going to the courts, you better believe that he and his staff have discussed it seriously.
Yes. I mean, you know that it's kind of a vexing question when David NYC of Swing State Project, this is his concluding sentence, I'm not clear on whether this means McDonald is sending it back to the legislature to the drawing board or whether he plans to substitute of his map on his own.
Then
so it's kind of like
he
doesn't even know, and he's usually in the know.
Yeah, then there's the thing, you know, about the Voting Rights Act, majority black districts and that sort of thing playing into it, too. That's another reason I think this is headed to the courts.
Yes.
Don't you,
Catherine?
Yeah, I do, too. I think that's but I just think it's weird that they didn't – it just seems odd that they, like David said, that they wouldn't coordinate and try to make something that they didn't think would go to the courts, right? I mean – it just seems odd that their legislators would not, you know, provide something to the governor that he would feel comfortable signing, since they're all Republicans.
And then there's this one Republican district in question there, too, that's really throwing it into a turmoil. So,
yeah, the current congressional 4th district under this plan, the current district includes parts of Norfolk, Newport News, although it didn't like it concludes all the city, and then it skirts away from Richmond, the actual city, and gets some suburban areas, and Randy Forbes is the current representative, and then if you look at the new district, it would include a lot of, you know, inside of Richmond, and then it would also include more, it looks like the city of Norfolk, but not Newport News, and so... You know, and it says that the demographics turn from a Republican district to a Democratic district with this change, and this is a bunch of Republicans come up with this map.
Forbes just barely lived like, what, a block within his own district to start with. This change puts him over in a Democratic district, which essentially puts him out of a job, right?
Well, but do remember, you don't have to live in your own congressional district. I mean, until the last round, if you will, of redistricting, you know, redistricting in Georgia, Phil Gingrich lived in two different 11th districts, or represented two different 11th districts and never lived in them.
Dynamic up there, though. People may look at that issue a lot differently.
Oh, I don't know what was never a bigger issue here. But you know, I'm just saying that that's not a necessity, if you will, like it is in some offices. Like, for instance, there was a real strange story talking about residency. A guy that was the head of the police department in Clayton County, he wanted to run for sheriff, didn't meet the residency requirements, and now he's running for county commission. He meets the residency requirements for county commission, but doesn't meet it for sheriff for the same county. I mean, as crazy as that is, so sometimes residence requirements get real sticky, but in this case, it's not even a factor as far as just being able to legally run. But, yeah, I think we had a solid show, and Representative Debbie Buckner from Columbus came on and gave us a great wrap-up, and we got through some other stuff. And then next week, I think, Tim, you did do a little fact-checking, and our anniversary is the 22nd, so we're not going to come on during the week and confuse things. But next week would be our anniversary show, and I tell you what, guys, I'm going to try to get something on Florida, because not only is it one of our two largest southern states, it's a state that has a lot of news and a very unpopular Republican Governor Rick Scott, and we know that's one of our favorite things is to pile on when people figure out these Republicans. So I have a feeling that'll be on tap for our anniversary show, among other things, for Easter Sunday of all things. Yeah. Well, good
okay,
evening.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys.
We are the heirs of that first.